Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. I want to welcome back my good friend, Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action. Good morning to you, my friend. How you doing?
Good morning, Earl. Just was up in Appleton, but I'm back in Milwaukee, ready for action.
So let me ask you, Dr. Craig, am I misreading the tea leaves, or does it appear as though we're finally starting to see some movement nationally as well as the state, where Democrats are starting to win back a little bit of the ground, the territory that we've lost over the years?
Well, we might consider it like the war in Ukraine.
Yeah, that's
right?
What I'm...
Where, in other words, one side is making progress, but it's still trench warfare, right?
Right.
They use a metaphor. They don't literally use trench warfare now. That
right.
goes back to World War I. But it is... So, yes, we seem to be advancing at the moment, but there are still a whole heck of a lot of reasons why this fight is... far from won. It's better to be on the offensive than on the defensive.
Well, I mean,
in this kind of war for democracy. But I would just say what Tucker Carlson did this week is an example of the threat still right in front of us.
Yeah. So, Dr. Craig, that's what I'm talking about. You know. So, is it so much that even in the face of what Tucker Carlson did, and what you know, even Rupert Murdoch has said himself, there are people who, in the face of that, Dr. Craig, it doesn't change their views at all.
Well, they've been manipulated, and they are, and all the text messages that the Dominion voting machine lawsuit have turned up, and this is, we only know this because a major corporation was defamed. We would not know this if they were just lying about democracy. That's
right.
Totally legal in the United States. God knows what text messages would show about a whole lot of other things at Fox News, right? This is
right.
sort of, we just get this one chance to pick the rock up and see all the critters running underneath. As I used to do when I was a kid, so I can
right.
see some rocks. It was amazing how many were under there.
Right.
And so that's what happened with Fox. But, you know, I don't know if the stone's going to stay up, right? And so one way to think about it is that disinformation works. Disinformation works because of human nature and because the folks who there are people who will do it. There'll always be people who will do it if they can gain power from it, right? And it doesn't take many, and then they have power, and there's more of it. And people have vulnerabilities to this. And so what's really being thought about now, Earl, and you'll not hear this on MSNBC or Fox News right now, is how we could better, the term is, this is what the research shows, inoculate people against it. That there are ways we could be talking to people that it is very much like people who are vulnerable to cults, right? And what the problem we're going to have is we have to deprogram 25% of the population and don't have the tools to do that. Moving forward, one of the ways we need to do this is you can inoculate people at the front end so that they are less vulnerable to disinformation. I think there's also a lot of things you can do. And there's a really good book called The Persuaders that's out right now by a very good journalist that lays a lot of this out, Earl. But then we also need a movement that is effective in countering it, not so much that our movement, you know, a strong progressive Democratic Party, can address the hardcore audience that Tucker Carlson has that is pushing them to want to do this, and therefore they're giving them what they want for power and profit, but can address a lot of other people so that we have governing majorities. It's going to take a lot longer to deal with that 25% that is completely under the sway of an authoritarian ideology.
So the 24-hour news that we get, Dr. Craig, you know, we can say 24-hour news cycle when maybe 16 or 18 of those hours aren't even worth even focusing on. It's indoctrination. How do you undo that? Because, you know, there are people who just leave it on. And so there's not a whole lot more to talk about, but to just go on and on and on. And that's kind of what happens with Fox News. People don't change the channel at all.
Well, inoculation's easier. That is making people more resilient to disinformation. Right now, we have a society where they're very vulnerable to it. And one of the reasons is the amount of hope and dislocation that's been caused in this country without our democratic system functioning to represent people and just allowing large corporations to steal wealth, outsource it to other countries, build massive fortunes, and take most of the gains of our society. In a strange sort of way, conservatism is benefiting from as far as the people left behind who are now vulnerable to disinformation that they are generating. I hope that's not too complicated, but they're benefiting from what they themselves have created economically and politically in this country. But you can inoculate new people. This group has to be replenished, right?
Right.
As far as the people that are already true believers, that's more like folks who have joined a cult where it's deprogramming. And what the core of deprogramming is getting through to people, because people have an innate view that they don't like to be had. They don't like to be manipulated. And you have to find a way to get them to suspect that of the people who are manipulating them.
So,
now, that's a slow process. That's a very slow process. We can't wave a wand with the current Fox audience, but we can feed it politically, and we can prevent more people from becoming vulnerable to it, because if they get to an electoral majority, then we don't have it. Then we have a much, much worse
situation. So you're saying it's got to run its course. And I'm wondering, Dr. Craig, is if, when you're looking at, as I was looking at this article this morning in Kingston, New York, where, you know, a year ago, the rent for a two-bedroom apartment, you know, for someone making $32,000 a year is now $1,800 a month. And Kingston is an impoverished town. $3,200 a year is the median income there, and yet and they live under the federal poverty line, and yet we can't seem to get that fixed. So this is what gets me about all of this, Dr.
Because we don't have the political will. Even Democrats aren't proposing what would fix it. I mean, as a whole party, they're
right.
Individual Democrats who are right, but it's not in the governor's budget. And I think the governor's doing a lot of good things, but we have to be honest with ourselves about this,
but
right? There's nothing in the governor's budget that does a thing about that.
Well, this is in New York. This is in Kingston, but it's happening. It's all over.
It's way too high here.
It's the
north side of Milwaukee. People pay much more in terms of for much less in terms of the value you're getting.
So, Dr. Craig, that's the point that I'm trying to make is, as you and organizations like yours work to empower people to do and to fight for those things like, you know, rent, affordable rent, and in places that are livable, we should have a society that is opposed to that, not one that makes it possible to take advantage of people who are defenseless when it comes to that.
Yet the national organization we're part of, People's Action, has developed what I would call the Medicare for All of housing, a homes guarantee.
Okay.
Where we do a Marshall Plan to make sure that, and we have to intervene in the market a lot. There's a lot of exploitation and predatory practices going on in the real estate industry. And that's been for years. They're one of the main drivers of segregation and structural racism in this country historically. So you have to intervene in a lot of that, but you have to have that goal that it's a fundamental human right, and we need to create a society where it's guaranteed, where you have a housing guarantee, affordable housing that is adequate to your needs. And we don't have the Democratic Party unified on that. And I'm not saying, actually, that we just leave the current Fox News adherents to themselves. So it's going to be a long process. The deep canvassing we do, where we have deeper conversations with people, it does change one person at a time, but I don't want to say that it's enough people that you're reducing Fox News viewership right now. But our movement needs to be part of inoculating, right? We need to give people something positive they can believe in so that they are less vulnerable to disinformation, because if they feel hopeless, they can easily turn to hate and division. That makes them feel better than having no explanation.
We've got to go to a break. On the line, Dr. Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Wednesday at 10 o'clock. That means Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action, is on call. You know, Dr. Craig, the older I get, the more I realize the American people, far too many of the American people, know things aren't right, but they just feel like they can't change them. That we are powerless, that it's bigger than any of us can change. And the problem with that way of thinking, Dr. Craig, is that if we look at it from that perspective, it's never going to change, right? I mean, and the change can only be incremental. I mean, there is no magic wand. We've got to do this, you know, pebble by pebble.
Yeah, we you and I have talked a fair amount about giving people hope. And it can't be idle hope, right? Some speakers who will just say, oh, we should be hopeful, things could change. No, you have to talk in a way that shows them a pathway, but grants the struggles and the barriers, right, that they know exist. I did a budget listening session last night in Appleton with the state representative up there, Democrat Lee Snodgrass. And Lee had the challenge, I think, and, you know, all legislators are struggling, when her own constituents that packed the room were asking about, you know, why could we get this, could we get that? We love that paid family medical leave is in the governor's budget, Badger Care expansion. She was sounding like a little bit of a downer, explaining how the Republicans will not listen, do not care what voters think, and are going to, and have already announced they're taking all of Governor Evers's budget initiatives out, and starting with their last budget, as they build a budget from the legislature. And so what I did is I talked about where there is hope. I said, look, we're about to, you know, we need to keep doing our work and people need to volunteer. We're about to, for the first time in over a decade, have a real Supreme Court that actually will make fair judgments based on the law, right? A fair and equitable interpretation of the law. That is, if Judge Janet wins, obviously. And that means every legislator, every Republican legislator, has to actually factor in their mind that they actually could be put into a competitive district where they'd actually have to answer for themselves in their next election. And so if we build enough of a public push on the very popular things that also would create the most change, like family medical leave, like Badger Care expansion, like the governor's initiative to put money into child care or early childhood education, as it should be understood, then, and it's clear who's against it, right? Them, that sets us up either to give them a choice, either actually move in the direction of what people want, and I would include in that legalizing marijuana, or set up the issues by which you can be defeated in 2024. And so what I was trying to give the audience is a pathway, what Representative Snodgrass is telling them was accurate about this, the way the legislature is, the way Republicans are, but we got to figure out how we could change the politics underneath. And that includes how bold Governor Evers might be in vetoing big parts of this budget. The more public pressure out there pushing in his direction, the more bold Governor Evers is going to be. So what the point being, Earl, that you have to give people a pathway and hope and not fall into, because it's very easy to be cynical about the situation we're in.
You know, Dr. Craig, you and Citizen Action, as long as I've known you, you guys have always been, you know, out on the front line in David taking on Goliath. And you don't always win. But, you know, again, to not even put up a fight is what has happened. And why I think we've fallen so far behind in this. But I do honestly feel like there's some incremental things that are happening, even if it's, you know, while we look at the Supreme Court race, you know, we're actually, you know, 4 weeks away, and it clearly is not a done deal. We saw Mandela leading Ron Johnson. But, you know, to know that, you know, there's at least a great chance that we can change the Supreme Court, which can then change other things, Dr. Craig. But people have to be able to see that and understand that. And I know that's what you guys do. What are you seeing with that, with the, you know, face-to-face meetings?
We're doing, I haven't been able to go on doors yet. I've been doing our phone canvas, which has a computer, predictive dialer. So you talk to a lot more people a lot more quickly than dialing a number. People are remarkably positive and aware of the race. So these are every session has been extremely encouraging as far as the number of people who get it and who are definitely voting for Janet and are aware of the issue. So that's positive. It's also coming out of the primary. There hasn't been a whole lot about from the Kelly's forces.
Right.
Both the billionaires behind him and Kelly himself, and he's been being pounded. It's usually the other way around. And so I don't want to, I think you're right, take that for granted. It's sort of like when Putin's being quiet, maybe that's when you should really worry, right?
Right.
So they may be divided because they had a division among right-wing Republicans in the primary, and maybe we're both going to have a strong candidate that is well-funded and a divided opposition that acts more like the Democrats is ineffective. But we cannot assume that because they have a tremendous, what some scholars would call a hiving instinct. And they may just be getting themselves reorganized for an unbelievable blitzkrieg that could start any day. We've got to assume that unless we get a lot closer to the election without much sign of resistance. I mean, they're
As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action. Dr. Craig, let the audience know the importance of what each of us can do individually to attempt to right the wrongs that we are dealing with, because there's no magic pill, no magic bullet, but each one of us in our own way, we have to ourselves give of ourselves to turn this around. Am I off base with that?
No, not at all, Earl. And part of the reason people are so vulnerable to disinformation is they feel extremely disconnected and alienated. It used to be that there was a deeper sense of community where people were involved with each other in all sorts of ways, in civic clubs, at church, right, in political clubs, various causes, and felt part of a community. Now, a whole lot of people don't know anyone on their block or
right.
in their neighborhood.
Right.
And all they're exposed to is what's coming over the airwaves, which gives the plutocrats, you know, the people who have the money in this country, a huge opportunity to manipulate them and to play on, you know, how that makes humans feel. We're social animals when we're evolved that way. The Harvard sociologist Robert Putnam wrote a very important book over, you know, a decade and a half ago called Bowling Alone, about how, you know, all the bowling leagues had gone away, but it was a metaphor for the whole loss of connection to each other.
Right.
So when we're rebuilding democracy, what we're doing is we're trying to rebuild community, okay? And democracy is much more than voting. It has to be a whole lot of people organizing together and voluntary associations of every kind to shape the country and to influence the direction of our legislation, our elected officials. And so Citizen Action, our organization, Citizen Action Wisconsin, is one of the groups that's trying to reconnect people. But our lane is specifically to impact elections, where citizens and voters are the stars of the show, not the people who put all the ads on television, which only work because people aren't connected to each other the way they do, particularly the kind of ads that are run, and then influence at what actually comes out of elected officials and representative democracy. Representative democracy doesn't work if elected officials are hearing mostly from lobbyists paid for by big corporations and the ultra-rich. And that's what's happening. Well-meaning legislators, you know, your current Mr. Smith goes to Washington or to Madison right now, finds out that everyone listens to the Hospital Association and the drug lobby and the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce and the realtors, and hardly listens at all to any actual people they represent. They have a tiny voice, right, where there has to be this immense public backlash in their district for them even to notice it. But the lobbyists are there every single day, and these are charming people who are paid to be charming and are helpful to elected officials, right, help them get reelected. Give them tickets to their boxes at the Fiserv to watch the Bucks, like entities like We Energies, which is funded entirely by our utility rates, is wining and dining people in their Bucks box, right? I can tell you that it exists. I've been invited to it before. In the past, when they thought I might be reachable, now I'm beyond the pale, and that's just fine with me.
you know, Dr. Craig, I think that the American people, for the most part, don't know how the government works, don't know that lobbyists play as prominent a role as they do. And so even while we're trying to get people to understand what's going on, if they don't even know that this is taking place, we keep falling further and further behind because people don't know that the people that we elect are having to make a decision whether or not they're going to support the people who put them in office, who give them an opportunity to sit down with the lobbyists, or if they're going to represent their constituents. And to me...
And when people are disconnected, Earl, even if they mean well going in, the lobbyists are insistent and are heard constantly, right? But frankly, 10 people, well-organized, can influence an individual state representative, people who live in that district, right, and bring other people in their direction and be heard louder than the lobbyists. But
really?
It takes people
really?
Getting together. If they're not just 10 isolated individuals
right,
making a phone call
right.
or saying disconnected things in a meeting, I mean, they're working together, right? And they're very present to the legislator, and they're talking about things that matter to the whole community, not just pet peeves on their part. I mean, I'm not saying if these are people who want, you know, dogs removed from their neighborhoods that's going to go very far, right? There's a lot of stuff people push that is not, you know, something that is actually of interest to most of the constituents in the district.
You know, Dr. Craig, this is both Democrat and Republican. And let's do this. Let's go to the phone line. Ron from Milwaukee. Hey, good morning, Ron. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Good morning. Dr. Craig's reference to the Bowling Alone book has really struck a chord with me. Another book that helps explain the plight people are in, which I believe came out in the 80s, and it's by a guy named Neil somebody, Amusing Ourselves to Death. And it was about how people are just sort of increasingly distracted by pretty shiny things in our culture. Lots of television, lots of movies, lots of easy ways to kind of forget about the troubles of the world. And, you know, rather than go to a community meeting where you're going to meet some good friends and work on some problems and, you know, maybe share a beer or something like that, people are tired, they're overworked, too many hours at their workplace.
The family,
too many commitments,
family issues.
Yeah, you know, daycare. The daycare center can't take the kids today. Our car broke down. We don't have a good car, and it's all you can do just to get through your life day by day. And at the end of the day, I really should go to that neighborhood association meeting. There's some things I want to say there, but I am just doggone tired. You know,
my daughter has a soccer game. My son has a basketball game.
Yeah, and then there's a third leg to this stool, which is called, and I remember this old underground comic from the 60s by Robert Crumb, the famous cartoonist. The comic was called Despair, and all it was about people, downtrodden people, wandering through their lives, you know, waiting for the next shoe to drop. And it was funny, but it was also tragic because it's so real. People have, you know, the media, I mean, this is when, you know, Republican commercials say, well, you know, or they're apologists for some, you know, like Social Security. Well, politicians, they all do it. They all do the same thing. You know, they're all trying to get money out of lobbyists. They're all, and there's a grain of truth in that, but they're comparing, you know, it's like the guy once said, I mean, when you're comparing conservative malfeasance these days with people on the left, it's like amateur teams playing against the pros.
Hold on, Ron. Dr. Craig, you want to respond?
At the beginning, Ron was referring to a book by Neil Postman called Amusing Ourselves to Death, which is a very great book. Neil Postman is no longer with us, but outlines, you know, how media becomes the substitute, entertainment becomes the substitute, not just news, but not any kind of entertainment for actual civic life. And Ron makes a great point about how hard it is for one isolated person trying to, you know, do everything they need to do to get ahead and raise a family or, you know, keep a roof over the head, to also get involved and go to the neighborhood association meeting. Now, that is still the model, though, I would say, where the one individual has to go to this probably boring neighborhood association or listening session with their alder person, right? As opposed to a group of people creating community, like that's what we try to create at Citizen Action, our local chapters, which we call organizing co-op, where they're doing it together. Not everyone can go and do everything, but they're planning together and starting to move things forward, right? And democracy is not only not a spectator sport, it's a participatory sport, it's also a team sport. And that pushes against the kind of rampant individualism we have now where everyone's on their own, right? To go figure out how to go tell the state rep healthcare costs are too high, you need to do something. Well, guess what? They just hear one voice saying there and someone else saying it's like different a couple of weeks later. The hospital association's going to have more influence. And then there's, once you're organized and you have leadership, what you can say to legislators. We have direct access to a number of legislators. And I say to legislators who are told by their own Democratic Party that they better stay good with the hospital association because they're powerful, I tell them, you didn't promise your constituents you were going to make healthcare affordable. You can't both follow what the hospital association says all the time and ever anger them and actually not be lying to your own constituents. You got a moral choice to make. And that shocks some of them, but that is the truth.
Ron?
Yes.
Yeah, you want to respond to Dr. Craig?
Just that pessimistic such the conditions are these days for people on the, you know, working Americans, salaried paycheck Americans. I do think there's a chance for a resurgence here, and I am aware of you know, efforts by Dr. Craig's group and many others to kind of revitalize community correspondence meetings. And the point, I think, too, is that this is serious, important work that can get a lot done and help people feel empowered rather than feeling that despair. But the other part of it is oftentimes it can be fun. I mean, everybody thinks about sitting around a table and arguing. And I've been to many community meetings, you know, where it was a beans and rice dinner where everybody had a nice meal and there was a folk singer for a while and then there was business. And it puts people in a good mood. I mean, it's what ancient cultures have done for thousands of years. They get together, they have some fun, they talk about their problems, and then they feel more empowered.
Hey, Ron, thank you very much for the call. You know, Dr. Craig, Ron just kind of painted the picture.
Yeah.
That
he did.
You know, that you talk about regaining democracy or recovering democracy. Because
let me give an example, Earl, that follows what Ron said. When I was up in Appleton last night with Representative Snodgrass, the local state rep, we were at the Democratic Party headquarters, and they put it right downtown in Appleton in a vibrant street front where there's a lot of other stores and a lot of traffic, and it's near Lawrence University. And you could see the other events they had. They had a game night for you know, Democratic Party members. They had a night where you go out to the microbrewery down the street together and all sorts of other stuff like that. But then also they had all the lawn signs and they were all out canvassing every day. People would go volunteer and knock for Janet Protasiewicz. But they had all the community stuff. Some of the stuff was just getting together and having community. It wasn't necessarily making phone calls, but it included making the phone calls, right? Or going and canvassing door to door. And so it's exactly what Ron said. So there are people trying to recreate this, and folks need to find something that they can enjoy, that they can tie into, because, again, democracy is a team sport, and people feel better. You feel better about life being in these associations and connections and in community with other people.
All right, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. My guest is Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You can follow me on Facebook at the Earl Ingram Show and on Twitter at Earl_Ingram. You know, Dr. Craig, my guest is Dr. Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action. Dr. Craig, sometimes I wonder if the divide between generations plays a role in what you are doing. Are you in what you do and, excuse me, other groups like yours? I know that my generation is certainly always represented, but the younger group of people who really, this is, we're talking about their futures. How have you been able to incorporate and have that younger generation and yours and my generation work collectively to address these issues?
I would call that a work in progress. In other words, I want us to do it better as an organization. We're connected in some ways. We have interns from Marquette in our office every day, so we're making those connections. But you're totally right. This needs to be not only multiracial, but intergenerational. And it's almost like I think young people always rebel against their parents, right? Their generational
right.
level, right? And in a way, because the previous generations have led us to this point, the next two generations coming up, Generation Z and the millennials who are ahead of them, are the most progressive in at least half a century in the United States. So there's a huge opportunity there. One thing that shocked me about doing a lot of phones during the Supreme Court race as part of Citizen Action Wisconsin's volunteer phone program, which people can sign up for on our website and volunteer in, the number of young people that pick up, I mean, people in their 20s or college age and talk to you. We'll have a 20-minute conversation with you because we do deep canvassing, so it's a longer conversation. I don't remember that in the 90s or the aughts, Earl. It seemed like everyone who would talk to you was in their 40s, 50s, 60s, right? And the seniors were the ones that were more talkative. And so that's I think that's very interesting. They're tuned in and aware and wanting to talk about it. And you're right that since you have a progressive younger generation, they're coming up at a time where there's this existential threat, climate change, which is already affecting us and devastating us, but will be genocidal level when they're adults if we don't do anything. And they are able to observe the generation ahead of them not doing nearly enough. Even the ones who are not denying climate change, like the Tucker Carlsons and the right, still are just offering little small ball, nice sounding stuff that isn't up to the problem.
You know, Dr. Craig, they see the things and the struggles that they are going through, even with their college degrees, and they see that something is just not right as they struggle constantly in a nation of plenty. They're well educated, so they're aware, and I think Dr. Craig more willing to fight, probably more so than you and my generation who had it a lot easier.
Yeah, they've seen the repercussions of complete disinvestment where we built prisons and stopped funding education, including higher education, right? That was decisions the elected officials of previous generations in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and in the aughts, the first decade of the 21st century, made and continue to make. And, you know, when I went to college, it wasn't as affordable as it had been in the 60s, right? But it was still within reach, and I took it for granted, right? I just assumed that was the way things are, right? But you can still, in a public university, piece it together with work study and other stuff. Now there's no way. You're going to go way into debt unless your family happens to have resources, which is, again, a matter of inequality, because whose families have resources to fund something expensive like even going to a public university these days is not fairly distributed, and it's of no fault of any child's own where they were born into, what side of the tracks they were born into, what side of the racial line they were born into, right? So they're seeing this, and they're seeing the repercussions, and they're seeing the things that need to change at a structural, fundamental level. They don't think we just need to lower the student loan interest rates a percentage or two. They think we need free college, and they're right.
You know, Dr. Craig, they also know that as your and my generation ages, there's an X amount of dollars, and those resources are going to so many baby boomers with Social Security and Medicare and others that is going to put them even further behind the eight ball. So you would think that they would certainly, these young people are aware that there's something that's not right. And, you know, and so, I mean, we've got to get them to understand that they've got to be willing to fight for their own futures.
And, you know, I think that young people can buy into the idea that Medicare and Social Security, because they would like a secure retirement as well, and we've taken right. away pensions, right? In fact, they're there for expanding it, making it better. But, you know, think about this. We're not in any position to abolish police, and no one's proposing that who is in leadership or leading any parties, right?
Right.
But just doing police only, which is what's happening now, and using police in a way that and not having facilities and treatment, we are criminalizing mental illness and substance addiction. And it's the most expensive thing possible. It makes us unsafer. It's one of the things driving crime rates. And we're sending men and women with guns who are not trained to mental health emergencies. And so young people understand better that we can do this better. This is nonsensical, right? What we're doing.
Yes.
And it's costly. The cost of putting someone in prison, as opposed to preventing them from having to go to prison in the first place by providing serious mental health safety net and serious substance abuse, and rather than what has failed, which is prohibition.
Dr.
Right?
Craig,
it's clear to young people.
Dr. Craig, it's unfortunate. We got to leave it there. But thank you, as always, for a great hour. We'll be back in touch a week from now. Thank you. Thank everybody who made the
show.
Thank
you, Will.
Thank you, Calvin. We're going to continue to do this. I'll be back on tomorrow. And tell me I'm in a nightmare that we're not going to be getting this snow. I'll see you guys on tomorrow. See you later.